Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today our topic is community safety and the people with the job to keep us safe, the men and women working with the Anchorage Police Department. Here to enrich our understanding and take our questions is Police Chief Christopher Tolley. Chief Tolley is still a little new to the job. He took over in October of 2015, about 4 months ago, with the arrival of Mayor Berkowitz. We're also joined today by Troy Payne, a member of the Anchorage Community Police Relations Task Force and a professor of justice at the Justice Center at UAA. Dr. Payne has a doctorate in criminal justice from the University of Cincinnati. He uses data analysis and theory to help solve community policing problems. And of note, he authored the report on officer-involved shootings in Anchorage for 1993 to 2013. The goal of today's show is to better understand what it takes to keep Anchorage safe. There are big challenges: high alcohol and drug use, homelessness, tough economic times. Anchorage is also a richly diverse community served by an overwhelmingly white police force. We'll talk about all that in the next hour with our two guests, and we invite your questions and your comments. Let me throw out our phone numbers, and then we'll get talking to our guests. If you've got a question in Anchorage, please give us a call at 550-8433. And I doubt we'll get statewide calls because this is the Anchorage Police Department we're talking about, but if you're so interested, you can call us at 1-888-353-5752, and we can also take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right, so welcome to you both. Welcome, Chief Tolley.
Hello.
Really glad to have you. I know that it's hard to get an hour of your time. You're a busy person, so we're very grateful that you took the time to join us on the air today.
You're more than welcome. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. And Troy, Dr. Payne, I want to say thank you very much because you have a lot of background in community policing and the challenges and solutions and all of that. And I leaned heavily on you getting ready for this show, and I really appreciate that you could join us today, too.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. I did tell you before we started that I wanted to find out how you found your way into this field. I'm always deeply curious about people. So let's start with you, Chief Tolley. You have had a long career in enforcement. Tell us a little bit about it and why you were drawn to this work.
Sure. It was sort of ironic in that my father was a graduate of one of the military academies, and growing up and graduating from high school in the mid-70s, felt this compelled to serve my country and serve my nation community. So I was looking to go into the military and didn't find the right fit. At the same time, learned about law enforcement and thought, hey, wow, I think I might do that. It'd be a great way to serve my country and my community. At the same time, continue my education and get my academic credits and so on. Mm-hmm. So I sort of stumbled into law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I didn't know much about the big city of Baltimore when I grew up, in that I didn't live on a farm, but it was farmland all around
me.
Rural. Kind of naive, you know, didn't really know what one-way roads were and and things like that. So I had a lot to learn.
You want a fast learning curve.
For sure.
Is Baltimore where The Wire was made?
Correct.
gives you any feel for Baltimore. Yeah.
Yes, and I dabbled with that a little bit over during my career. I was asked to help
Did
out with
you
that
really?
A little bit. Yes. That's
we
a whole
have
another story.
A star from The Wire on the show today.
Yes. So, it was really great to go into Baltimore. They had a department at that time where a lot of one-person cars, so it gave you a more massive-looking police force on the street. And if you responded to a call, you almost always had another backup officer or a group of officers coming, but it gave you more of an omnipresence.
And that was intentional, to look like there's lots of people taking care of you here.
Uh-huh. Correct.
Okay.
And if you were investigating an incident, you responded to a call for a burglary, a robbery, a sex offense or whatever, and made what we called back then a collar, an arrest, mm-hmm. then you would see the case from beginning through end. And it gave you an opportunity that you would arrest the suspects, process evidence, things like that, and then go to the court proceedings that would follow, and had an opportunity to testify in all levels of trial.
Is that different today?
Well, a lot of times departments have detectives, so they'll be called in for the more serious crimes and so on, and frees up the officers in uniform to go and respond to immediate calls.
I see. So service was what, really, you first you thought military service but didn't quite connect, and then But the police is a way of serving. So was it really that?
That giving back to the community and being part of my community. You know, one thing people, you know, can't forget, each one of these officers on the department and other law enforcement organizations in our state, they live in our communities. They are a part of our communities. They have families to go to our churches and synagogues as well as to our schools and play soccer and ice hockey and other sports. And
I know. I had a police officer living on my street for a while, and I really loved seeing that car parked in the driveway. I think everybody did. It was like, yeah, they're here. and we, of course, it was a neighbor, and we got to know her, too. It was a woman. She was, I think, a detective. So service and – but, you know, when you made the leap from Baltimore to federal service, the Drug Enforcement Agency, what was that about? Was that so – I wanted more influence, you know, bigger picture or –
So that's the Drug Enforcement Administration.
Yeah.
A lot of people say agency, but it's administration,
okay.
DEA. And you know, I was reluctant initially to go into that as a profession. I was looking at various law enforcement agencies, but I was really impressed because they were a small enough organization back then. We had just hit 2,000 agents when I joined the organization, and now I think they're closer to 5,000 agents, or at one time they were over 5,000, I think, because budget things and so on. They've dropped back also.
Yeah.
But it was in terms of federal agencies, that's a relatively small organization. So what I really liked about the DEA, different from other agencies, was that even as a brand new agent, you go out and you can make your cases. Well, you would take that lead and so on. Whereas a lot of the other organization takes a very long time to work up through the ranks, so to speak, or gain that tenure for you to be a leader of your own investigations.
Okay.
So it was very satisfying in that aspect.
You're
opportunities
a self-starter.
were endless.
Yeah.
The opportunities were endless.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. And that was really satisfying because 28 years, I think, there. Yeah.
Right. Over 28 years and some fantastic assignments.
Yeah. Around the world, I think you were.
Around the world, correct.
Yeah. And then the last 4 years were here in Anchorage, I think.
That's
right?
Correct.
Which is probably how you got to know our town and got
really
to think
did
about
and fell in love with Alaska. You know, just never really thought it'd be what it's turned out to be. It's just an incredible place, the Anchorage Bowl, and for that matter, the entire state and the people here are just so embracing. And what a great place for families.
Mm-hmm.
What a great anybody that wants opportunity. It exists here in Alaska.
Yeah, yeah. Every time I interview people, I mean, anyway, I want to go to Troy. I want to find out now, Troy.
Sure.
I know you've never been a police officer, but
you
have a lot of background and knowledge on community policing. So tell us why that pulled you in.
Yeah, I mean, my path here was really accidental. When I was an undergraduate in Indianapolis, I was a computer science major, and I didn't like those classes, and I was doing poorly in them. And so I started taking other courses, and it was an introduction to criminal justice course that really grabbed my attention. And over the next several years, ended up doing reasonably well in that. And I thought I wanted to be a police officer, so I did a few ride-alongs with a police department in Indianapolis. And as I did that, I realized, okay, this is really interesting, but there is no way that I personally can do this job.
It's hard.
It required a skill set that I didn't have. It required a level of professionalism that at the age that I was, I knew that it was going to be unlikely that I could do that. And I very much respect people who can. And so after looking around a little bit for what I could do, I'd always been nerdy, and I went to graduate school. So I attended the University of Cincinnati and earned a PhD in criminal justice from Cincinnati. When I was coming out of graduate school, the University of Alaska Anchorage Justice Center was hiring, and I needed a job. So I also accidentally ended up here in Alaska. I had no intention. I moved here for the same reason most people do, because there was a job and I needed one.
Opportunity.
Since then, I moved here in 2010, and since then, I would have to agree with the chief that this is a really nice place to live. And what I've tried to do over the past 5 or 6 years is work with local and state agencies to try to make it an even better place to live. Mm-hmm. And that's a large part of what I do is both educating students at the University of Alaska Anchorage and also working with the Anchorage Police Department and other agencies to analyze data and really get at community problems.
Mm-hmm. We've got a really interesting community. So much diversity, so many people from all over the world are here. I mean, you might think, oh, you're up there on the edge of the Arctic, must be lonely. But no, it's not. I mean, it's really fascinating. I think it's kept me in Anchorage, too. I came for a job, but have stayed, had married my husband here, had a daughter here, you know, made it my home. And I feel like I know more and more people that is their story. You know, when I first got here, it seemed transient all the time. Right. People come up for an opportunity. Once that's over, they're gone. But more and more people seem to have said, this is a good place to raise kids. I think now that I'm in kid-raising mode, I think I'm going to stay. You know, things like that. So let's see. I was trying to take the 30,000-foot view about your job, and there were a couple things that I read getting ready for the show, Chief Tully. Mayor Berkowitz was excited to have you come into the agency, to the police department, saying you would bring a fresh perspective. Do you have any more information about what he had in mind?
Sure. You know, first of all, I think we share the same ideas and so on, and that family is so important, mm-hmm. community is so important, and we have the same goal of making this a safe and secure city. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud that this May it'll be 35 years married to my wife, mm-hmm. two wonderful children. One's halfway through law school, and the other one is a microbiologist, and she's doing her PhD. And
that's awesome. Yeah,
really proud mm-hmm. of them. Mm-hmm. And that's why you do these jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, you do it for your family, you do it for your community, mm-hmm. and you want to make Anchorage a nice place to live.
So not such a huge, fresh perspective, but maybe family-oriented, you know, making a town safe for families and people who want to live here. That's you're aligned with the mayor on that. You're aligned with all of us on that. So,
yes.
I know when there was an article where you were interviewed, I guess just as you were accepting the new position, you talked about the challenges that it's not that you just get to take care of this burg here, you know, but it's all these external influences. And I think we're talking about drugs and all kinds of things that can move in. And I was, thinking about, well, what would the DEA prepare you for? And it sort of made me think, actually, that's that kind of an agency that's reaching out all over. And you probably are bringing some great connections with you that might be quite useful to Anchorage as it reaches some of these challenges. And we talked, about spice, these things that come in and influence our community, use a lot of community resources. You may be bringing some experience with you that's actually especially useful.
Yes, no doubt about it. Those life experiences are uh-huh. really important. And the thing that I enjoyed most about working for the DEA was that you go into an office and you'd instantly think that group of 20 individuals, men and women, were agents, where in reality, maybe half of them were agents. The other half were detectives from the Anchorage Police Department, troopers from the Alaska State Troopers.
Oh, so real integrated.
Yes. Yeah. And it's through that collective and that joint effort where everybody brings something to the table that you're able to really take on these hard, challenging problems in our community and have success. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't stop with the boundaries of Anchorage, our human trafficking, our drugs, with the internet's today
cyber
and so on,
crime.
All the cyber crimes and all, it doesn't stop just at Anchorage. It goes out to the mm-hmm. valley. It mm-hmm. goes south down to the peninsula. Yeah. And then it goes throughout the state, and it doesn't stop there. Mm-hmm. It'll go to the lower 48 mm-hmm. as well as to other nations.
Yeah.
So as a department, you can't just get in a car or buy a plane ticket and go investigate each one of these things, incidents and so on. You have to work with others in the
classic,
law enforcement community.
You can't afford to be in a silo anymore.
You can't.
You know, nobody has enough money to operate the way they have to operate if they're in a silo. So they have to, it's relationships, it's connections.
So those partnerships, those relationships are paramount in success.
Yeah.
And not just from problem solving, but like solving a crime, but also funding sources and so mm-hmm. on. It's funding so challenging. You know, you need to make sure you're taking full advantage of grants and other opportunities out there to supplement what the municipality has available, what the state has available, what the federal government has available.
Yeah. I imagine being connected to a researcher like Troy, you may know about studies that are being funded that actually might illuminate something that the Anchorage Police Department is wanting to work on. Has that at all happened, where you're aware that there's some research being done and there's some money to do a study or anything like that that you've worked with them on?
Yeah, we have a tendency to operate in slightly different grant circles. So we have a tendency to
academic versus
more academic versus agency assistance. But I do have a colleague right now that's working on a version of a survey that contacts people who and asks them about their contacts with police departments. So it's the PPCS. It's a survey that has been done nationally, but hasn't been done at the state level. And we're also working on other surveys for a variety of just sort of basic research purposes. So I think what a lot of people don't really understand about the way that policing works in the United States is that we have, depending on who you ask and when, somewhere between 17 and 19,000 local police departments in the country. And most of those police departments, we don't know a whole lot about. And that's certainly true here here in Alaska. So in the Justice Center, a lot of what we do is that kind of Alaska-specific research and trying to get a handle on what the criminal justice system and the civil court system looks like here in the state. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant challenge to do that.
Mm-hmm. So in a community, a perfect example is last Thursday and Friday, we had put on a workshop dealing with the spice issue here in our community. Got support from the mayor's office and from the community. And what you see with something like that, and these are skills and experiences I had brought with me, what you see with it is that the public really then finally realizes, after listening to doctors from the various hospitals, from the fire department, from our educators, from the Native community, all the different groups that were present in this forum, that, hey, yeah, one tool is for law enforcement to come in there and arrest individuals, but does that fix our problem in our community? Mm-hmm. I love being able to try to start that dialogue and use science-based information, science data information and so on, look at it the best way we can and come up with a cohesive solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that must be satisfying, especially if, you know, it's maybe a chance to solve the problem as opposed to just deal with it day in and day out. Maybe we could start some solutions. So that's got to feel like maybe I can change things, you know. I just want to, if you just joined us, I just want people to know we have APD Chief Chris Tolley on the show today. We welcome your questions. We also have Dr. Troy Payne, who is a member of the Anchorage Community Police Relations Task Force. And also, he knows a whole lot about community policing and criminal justice. He works over at the Justice Center at UAA, does a lot of research about community policing. And let me just throw out our phone numbers so folks have them if they need them. Here we go. 550-8433 in Anchorage and 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And you can also send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Now, there's a couple areas I want our listeners to know that I want to talk about. One of them is recruitment. Eventually, we want to work our way over to diversify. You know, how do we diversify? We have a very diverse city. We want a diverse police department. What are some of the challenges to do that? And eventually, we want to end up kind of talking about how the police department communicates with the community. Those are some big areas, but we welcome questions in any area, but we'll explore these a little bit as the show goes on. So let's start with recruitment, and I'm back to you, Chief Tolley. How big is our force? Now, that's probably a number that you probably know all the time. You don't need to check, right?
Yes. So
how big is it, and is it the right size?
So, no, we don't have enough because of our economy and just some of the challenges we've had over the past several years. It's dwindled down, and we're not at the staffing levels that we should be. And that's not just the Anchorage Police Department saying that. That is experts coming in, taking a look, the perf review of our department, professionals that make a determination, what is the best size for a department based on the population, number of calls, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We typically will take in 600 to 800 calls a day at our dispatch center, and some days over 1,000.
Wow.
Every one of those calls need attention, mm-hmm. and those individuals calling in think it's the most important thing. So how do you staff the street that you can respond to each one of those calls? At the same time, you don't want officers running call to call, because all they're doing is being reactive.
Chasing, yeah.
How do we get to a staffing level that provides unobligated time for our patrol units so they can go into the community, take this data that we know about our crime, take these statistics and so on, take scientific approach to it, as well as gaining the trust of the community and working with our community to try to prevent crime before it happens.
Mm.
Also making solving crime that much easier, because you're working along with the community and having their trust.
Mm-hmm.
So the key part of that is having the proper staffing levels. Right now, we're right around the 360-some level of sworn personnel, which are the officers.
Okay.
All the experts are saying we should have well over 400.
Really?
Correct.
Okay.
So our immediate goal is this 400. Uh-huh. That's what we really hope to get to by the end of the year. But it's going to be challenging. First of all, you have to have appropriation, and you have to have the funding in place before you can even talk about filling these positions. We've been very fortunate. An administration that's strongly supports public safety and an assembly that has made those funds available to the community. So now we have the funding in place, and we're facing the next endeavor, and that is getting the bodies to become police officers.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something the police department can do on their own. We need help from the community. Our success is really based on community involvement and how much the community wants this.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it true that everybody always wants the cop on the beat? You know, they talk about the good old days when the cop would walk down the street and everybody knew him and he knew everybody. Well, first of all, we live in a city of cars, so that doesn't exactly, you can't really walk a beat, right? But I mean, is that a nostalgic view, or is there actually something true to that?
No, and I reflect back from when I was in Baltimore originally, and some of those times I wasn't always in a car. I actually walked a foot beat,
uh-huh.
and felt firsthand how much it was appreciated, as well as how much I appreciated it, because I knew my neighborhood, I knew my community,
yeah.
and I knew those business owners and those residents and so on.
Yeah.
So when something went awry, we were able to together take action.
Mm-hmm. But it's not really, is that something we still, I guess I'm getting at community policing in general, you know, where maybe they're not on their feet walking around the, you know, although there are, in summer, there's bicycle police officers sometimes. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. always the case or just sometimes. But anyway, I just, you know, as opposed to just, I mean, for example, does the police department go to community council meetings? Is that a way where you might, what are some of the other ways that you get to be familiar with the community and the community gets to be familiar with you?
Yes, the department's always present. I have pre-agenda right after this meeting in preparation for next week's
assembly. Yeah.
And
I was thinking about the community councils, the neighborhood groups.
And we are engaged in a number of those mm-hmm. Groups. I think there's about 36 of them right now.
Yeah, there's
and,
a lot.
That takes a lot of resource, a lot of time.
Yeah.
And you also have schedules, you know, officers working schedules and things like that,
yeah.
days off and things like that, evening hours versus when the groups often meet.
Mm-hmm.
It's all those challenges. And that's what you need, the unobligated time. You need time for the officers to be able to go into those groups and work along with them.
Right.
Gaining their trust.
Troy, jump in. Yeah.
The research has shown that unobligated time is key to being able to do any amount of community policing or problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the types of things that we're talking about, whether it's foot patrol or attending community council meetings, ideally, these are things that line-level police officers, so the officer on the street, is engaged in. And if the call stack, if the number of calls for service that the police department has is just over full, and the officers are running from one call, as soon as they clear it, they're going to the next one. As soon as they clear it, they're going to the next one. The police department as an agency, as a whole, does not have time to engage in these kinds of activities that have become the state of the art for policing in the past 25 years.
And
it's this is one of those things, being too small as a police agency, being understaffed is one of those things that creeps up on agencies, where at first it's a small problem and it gets bigger and bigger. And it can be difficult for the community to see that because they feel like they're not getting a return on their investment. As they're adding officers, they're not seeing officers show up at
community council meetings,
for example. Mm-hmm. But they can't do that until they meet their other obligations.
Right.
And it's it takes time for an agency the size of APD with 350 or 360 officers or so to be able to staff up. It takes a substantial amount of time for them to do that,
right,
even when they can fill recruitment classes.
Right, right. So for you, this is the horizon, adding officers so you can get to that a magic number. You would even benefit from more, perhaps, but that might allow you to sort of, like you say, not be running from call to call to call and maybe doing some of this more community-oriented, getting to know your community and being out, not on a call.
Yes,
so to speak.
For sure. And then with that, the more free times you have on these calls then allows us to take that unobligated time and fill positions in detectives in other areas to further
right get to the
address,
problem solving
yeah. right yeah. address our thefts and other yeah. things and, yeah. And so on.
I wanted to what are the challenges of getting people? Is it that I know some people really aspire to it, like you did as a young man. You
yes.
wanted to serve. Some people probably come forward like that. But what are some of the challenges?
So there's a lot of misconceptions out there. Oftentimes, the community thinks that I have to have a law enforcement background to become a police officer. I have to be a criminal justice major or so on.
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily true. I always advocate, do something and study something that you really have a passion for and you love. Because if you do that, your chances of being successful are much greater. If you're really interested in computer science, or if you're really interested in teaching, or mm-hmm. or any type of craft, carpentry, anything, and through that successful, you're positioning yourself to be successful in life. When you come over to law enforcement, yes, we have standards and they're pretty rigorous, but those that apply themselves and try, they can make those qualifications. And then we will give you everything you need to know about law enforcement in the academy and through in-service and continued training. But with you, now you've brought unique skills, such as an accountant, a computer science expert, and things like that. Now, those are skills that really help the department, because those are needs that we have within the department. Now we have a very diverse workforce.
Right. If everybody was
skills,
a criminal justice major,
exactly.
They all know the same thing. Right?
So I really advocate, do what you have a passion for. Study what you have a passion for. Work in those jobs before you're not of age and things like that.
Uh-huh.
With that also, the great thing about law enforcement, it's community service in the best form there possibly mm-hmm. is. You're really helping your neighbors, your families and all.
So, to feel good about what you do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. When I came on the job, you looked at a 20, 30-year career and that you were going to take one job and basically do that. And that's not just for law enforcement. That's just about every occupation. Mm-hmm. Today's generations, they only really are looking at 4 or 5 years and then what are they going to do next and so on. So what I invite everyone to do is seriously think about committing to public service, preferably public safety, and give back to your community by being a teacher, a police officer, a fireman, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
You will get life skills and learn things, as well as the police department allows you to continue with your education and, get advanced degrees and so
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
And they reward you for that.
Yeah.
So do that, and you will then, after a number of years in the police department, have really good skills to be successful in other sectors in our community, such as the oil industry. Or
mm-hmm.
I was talking to one of your news agencies, general managers, found out he was 6 years deputy sheriff in the skills
no
and
kidding.
The things he learned about the community. So,
uh-huh.
What a great advocate it would be.
Those
who have been in law enforcement, served their community,
and
then
move
on to other professions.
Yeah, but they understand it a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. I was thinking about you, Troy, because you said, I knew I could never be a police officer. And I kind of wanted to say, you know, what do you, you know, you look for people who are passionate about something and they acquired the skill, shows they can acquire skills, they can bring that into the department. But I also wondered about people who are interested. It's a weird public servant because you're the only public servants that actually, as you were saying, Troy, can what's the expression you use?
They have a monopoly on the legitimate use of force.
Yes, and you're the only public servants that really have that. So I'm interested in the people who are attracted to that. You know, I'm sort of more hopeful that's not why they're coming, because they get to do that, you know, but they come for this public service. And I guess how do you filter that, and how do you figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, let me clarify that for a second. There are a number of scholars who think that the core of the police role is that they have that capacity, that they have this monopoly on the legitimate use of force. And I think that's what we think of when we think of police officers. That possibility is always there. But what a police officer does on a day-to-day basis is about communication and about problem solving. It is very infrequently about physical force, extraordinarily infrequently, in fact. So when you're thinking about a career in policing, it's really a career of talking to people and figuring out what their problems are and how to solve this emergent situation that's in front of you. And that's what a lot of people misunderstand about the job.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to get an appreciation for it is to talk to police officers and to do ride-alongs, which the Anchorage Police Department has a great ride-along program. And I would recommend...
We'll talk about that and make sure people know how to find it. Yeah.
And I would recommend that actually, no matter what job you think you want, you should talk to people that do that job.
It's great.
And that's really with policing, because there are so many public misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to know, is to talk to folks that do it and go see what the job is like.
And ride along. And
yeah. So that responsibility of being able to use force in our jobs, that's what leads us to looking for qualities in individuals. And we want unquestionable character and integrity. We want individuals to be free of culture and ethic bias. Strong ethical code in both personal and professional life, desire to diligently protect and serve the community through courage, compassion, and respect, and finally, personal conduct above reproach, so that if use of force is used, it's in a justifiable and meaningful way. That it's just that. It's a tool.
Right.
It's not something, hey, I want to go out there and use force today
I
when I come
be
to
a
work.
Cop. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. Just if you've joined us, we have Chief Chris Tolley from the APD and Troy Payne with us in the studio. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk more about diversifying the police department and how the police department stays in touch with the community and new ways of doing that. So I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we have APD Chief Chris Tolley on with us and Troy Payne from the Justice Center at UAA and also a member of the Anchorage Community Police Relations Task Force. That's a long name, but we got it right. We do welcome your questions or your thoughts about community policing and maybe you have a favorite police officer you want to shout out to today. You can do that. So our number is 550-8433, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I wanted to get into the makeup of the police force and as it sort of blends with the town that it's in, you know. And so it makes sense. You hear this in every profession. You want teachers that look like the kids in the class, you know, and then those kids aspire to be teachers. You want police officers that reflect the diversity in your community. And I have no doubt that that is one of your goals, but it's challenging. And so I guess I just wanted to find out ways you might be, first of all, I guess a little bit of the data would be good to put out there. I saw a news article on Monday that was in the Alaska Dispatch that talked about 82% of the Anchorage Police Department is Caucasian. And then they had lots of information about the community and, you know, mentioned the classic things like, you know, we have the most diverse high schools in Bartlett and maybe three, actually, Bartlett, East, and West, I think. And you know, there's been all those news stories about Mountain View being the most diverse community in the United States, right next to Queens, New York, above Queens, New York, you know. So we know, and I think we value in this community a lot of diversity, but how do you get that to be reflected in the police department?
So we talked about the 360-some sworn officers, but, you know, our department really is 540 individuals. So we have unsworn also. These are our dispatchers and our records clerks and our call takers and all of the so-called behind-the-scenes
support. Yeah.
Type positions that go along with running a successful department. Mm-hmm. And those individuals, we're really proud in that when we look at for academies, that those individuals that have applied to be a police officer, and then we look at the end, so say 300 individuals who've applied for the police officer position, and then you get to less than 30 that actually make it into the academy and so on. One thing we see by looking at the different groups is that initial group is almost a direct reflection of the final group. So what that tells us is that we're not losing any one class of individuals, or they're not falling out. Now, does that help you with diversifying a department? I don't know. You know, I look at the faces here in your building. Does your organization, reflect the community?
Yeah.
I mean, you're all about serving.
Right.
Alaska,
right?
You know, and we all desire and we all really want that, and nothing would make us more proud. So we have to look at, are we doing something? Is there misunderstanding, misconceptions that's why we lose these individuals, or that's why they're not becoming police officers or employees of the department?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the effort needs to be made.
Mm-hmm.
How can you help do that? Well, you get out and you talk to the community. You meet with the faith-based community. You meet with the various neighborhood community groups and so on. You meet just with anybody you can and try to learn as much about them as individuals and them as groups, and make sure that they fully understand what it takes. We have these workshops from time to time where individuals can come in and ask officers about what's it take to pass this test. You know, do they thoroughly understand what our physical fitness test is all about? Or is there a cultural indifference that they might not fully understand what a push-up is, or, you know, what a run is, or this or that? Well, the same with the written and so on. And there's opportunities to practice on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's breaking down those barriers.
Yeah. I think I read in that article on outreach, and you mentioned this too, to leaders in these various parts of our community, that they might also endorse the career of police enforcement. You know, that they might say this is a, you know, people come from all over the world, and not every police department where they're coming from has a good reputation. So they might be afraid of the police. You know, they might think they're not to be trusted, you know, something like that. So when you have such a diverse community, and they're not all on the same page with the police department, which is why you have to do so much meeting and greeting and talking and
listening.
Yeah.
Understanding if we're missing something.
Yeah.
So that's really, really important, and we're, I think, doing a good job of making advancements.
And I think it's a fair point. You're not alone in this challenge.
This is a community challenge. This isn't just a
department. Look at our Anchorage Assembly. You know, I mean, many of these new groups that have come don't necessarily move immediately into the roles that you wish they would, you know.
And there are, I mean, if I can put my social scientist hat on for a moment. It's not as if policing is the only industry that has racial disparity. This is a problem that all employers face. Is how do they ensure that they get a representative group of people working for them? in private business, you've got a reason to do that because your products might be missing an entire category of consumers that would purchase it.
Right.
And in public service and in policing and other public safety areas, there are different consequences. So this is not something that's unique to policing.
Right, and I think that's fair
way.
To talk
and
about. Yeah.
I also think it's fair, this again is a nationwide trend, to mention that the most underrepresented demographic in police departments is women. So if you're looking at increasing diversity in police departments, we need to be thinking about not only race, but gender and different kinds of educational backgrounds, as the chief was talking about, and diversity along multiple dimensions. I think we spend a lot of time talking about just a handful of those dimensions instead of truly embracing what diversity means.
Right.
But this is not a challenge that's unique.
Right.
And what organizations have to do, what any employer has to do, is reach out to those communities that are underrepresented in their ranks.
Right. I'm going to take a phone call because you guys have brought out a caller. So I'm going to welcome Jim to Hometown Alaska. Jim, you're calling from Wasilla?
Yes. I used to live in Anchorage, and I worked in law enforcement in the 1970s when they first started the diversity move to get minorities into law enforcement. I worked in law enforcement for 5 years, and one of the biggest problems that I encountered was bullies in the workplace. And if you have a bully in the workplace, that's what's going to lead the rest of the crew to fit in, want to be accepted, and peer pressure is extremely strong in that group. So I saw minorities come in and behave like the rest of the group, and if there was a bully that was, you know, the acknowledged leader, and there always is. Every job I've ever had, there's always somebody out there in the weeds that has a tendency to get things done their way by bullying tactics, and that's what I see not being addressed when you have law enforcement overreach, or you see it in the news where somebody is unarmed or gets shot or whatever by law enforcement, and they never go back and find out why was that person doing that. Was he a bully? Was he being ruled by bullies in law enforcement?
Okay, well, you know what? I think you've got your question out there. It's like, how do you have a good climate in the police force? And I'm going to maybe go to Troy on that because he does a lot of research. And you know, basically, when you listed your qualifications to be a police department, being a bully was not on it. but, you know, people are human. Police officers are human. School teachers are human. I mean, we see many dimensions of the human character. But, Troy, how is that handled, do you know, sort of from a research perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer here is effective management.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to police officers, the fact of the matter is the majority of incidents that police officers take care of, there's no supervisor present. That's not just here in Anchorage, that's everywhere. But sergeants, road sergeants have, so these are the line level supervisors, the supervisors that are immediately above the police officers. They generally have a pretty good handle on what their officers are doing. And if they do their jobs well, they definitely have a handle on what their officers are doing. So what it takes is a combination of good line-level supervision along with a culture within the department that allows more experienced officers to mentor new officers and gives more experienced officers the leeway to talk to officers after an incident and say, okay, so that wasn't wrong, but you could have handled that better, and here's how. And this all comes back to an unobligated time and having officers have the time to do that kind of mentorship. Mm-hmm. So we come back again to staffing and the need to have appropriate staffing in a police department. Because when officers don't have time to mentor one another or to say, hey, gosh, you know, this could have gone a lot smoother if we had done this differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you end up with a kind of toxic culture within a police department. And what I can say about the Anchorage Police Department, I spent about 100 hours doing ride-alongs this past summer. And I saw a lot of that. I saw a lot of informal mentorship. I saw a lot of mentorship coming from line-level supervisors as well. And what I saw made me feel a lot better about the Anchorage Police Department and where it's going as it adds a large number of officers to its ranks.
Well, that's reassuring, Chief Tolley, don't you?
Definitely. The thing I'm so impressed by is the level of professionalism within that department. These men and women are just incredible. And you can never appreciate it unless you really do get that inside look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, being a bully isn't something that's unique to law enforcement. I mean, we see it in our schools and in other workplaces.
Yeah.
As a society, I think it's something that's taken a shift, that the society is not as nearly as tolerant of bullies as they
it
used
once
to be.
Was, yeah.
And so we, you know, we're trying to start this and make that impression on our youth by our school resource officers and so on, and convincing them at a very early age that's not the route to go. And we're trying to rid the workplace of that within the department. I don't really see it as a problem in our department. I'm very, very proud of how the respect that they show to the community to a point where I'm almost amazed. The other thing I can assure you, if anybody thinks that the department has done something wrong, we take that very seriously, and we will investigate it and determine, is there any malpractices or anything like that. Now, you hate to waste your time, but we don't look at it as a waste of time. So, you know, I encourage anybody, if they feel something has happened, bring it to our attention and we'll address it.
All right. So I don't think it's unique to the police department. And I mean, it pervades every discussion I've been in, and even in my workplace, you know, discussions of bullying and behaviors. And so I think it's just part of being human and culture changes and things like that. So we were on diversity. Let's see, where else do we want to go?
So what I'm really trying to do this year is have three academies, basically. Two in the traditional sense and one in a not-so-traditional sense.
Oh, that's
interesting. We're looking for individuals who already have certification by Alaska Police Standards Council. We're well aware that the state budget and so on may have additional shortfalls and may be very challenging, and that this might be timely for individuals in other departments that are already certified to think about making a career move. We think we have a very attractive department that individuals want to work for. So one of the things we're going to do is have a lateral group opening up, trying to get those individuals. And we're not even going to call that an academy. We're going to, instead of having to go through the full-fledged, months-long academy, they're going to get a two-week orientation and basically get them into the field training and out onto the street as quickly as possible. It's very
2 weeks of training versus what is an academy?
Not training. See, now these are individuals that are already certified and trained as police officers, such as our Alaska State Troopers and from other departments here in the state of Alaska.
Okay.
That are looking to make that career move into Anchorage. So those individuals would only be facing 2 weeks for an orientation, learning about municipal code and things unique, policies and procedures unique to the Anchorage Police Department. They already have what is required as far as standards and credentialing. Then we hope to have two other traditional type academies where we'd love to fill all 28 seats, one beginning in June and then the other one probably in the beginning of December. So with all that, you have to remember, you still have people who reaching retirement age and so on, and retention is just as important to us. So we hope, we're very, very optimistic, with the help from the community, we can get these seats filled and grow the department, not just the officers, but all the staff that supports it also.
I don't know if I'm taking did you have anything you wanted to add there, Troy?
Nope.
You and I had a little bit of a conversation in advance, which I found really interesting, and I thought I would mention it here. Like, if there's an incident anywhere in the United States that involves a police department, somehow it reflects on the local police department, whether or not that's accurate. So Ferguson happens, that's big, and you know, and when I, what I thought was interesting talking to Troy is some of the challenges in that situation do not exist here. Because people might be thinking, oh, that might happen here. You know, well, what he was explaining to me is that across the country, there are small geographic regions that have their own police department. And he even gave me the example that you might see a community the size of Fairview that had its own complete police department.
That's correct.
And we have a very unified approach here in Anchorage. I mean, we have one police department. That sounds like a really good way to go. And so I just thought that was an interesting perspective. We know there were there are problems in Ferguson. There was things like redlining and just a lot of issues, systematized racism and things like that, that don't necessarily replicate in Anchorage. But one of the biggest ones that was illuminating to me when I talked with you, Troy, was this idea of these many, many little entities that don't know each other and, you know, can't really help out.
The way that government is organized in the United States is often a challenge for agencies. It's both a philosophical issue and a historical accident. But in general, the people of the United States prefer local control. And in some places, this ends up with hyper-local control. In St. Louis County, for example, there are 80 municipalities and more than 50 police departments. That's in St. Louis County in Missouri. And here in Alaska, we have a different history. We're a younger state, so we don't have the issues that other cities have, particularly here in Anchorage, where as the city grew, it ended up taking over other parts of other municipalities. We don't have that issue here. So our government is somewhat less complex than what you would find in a local situation in other parts of the country in cities of this size. This makes things like public relations easier in some ways because it's one police department, and it also makes emergency management somewhat easier in some ways because it's one police department. It makes it harder because the area that the Anchorage Police Department serves, just in terms of land mass, is huge. It is very large for a local police department, much like the rest of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So it brings with it a set of challenges that are different from other places as well.
Yeah, yeah. I just think it's important for people to realize you can't just take one situation and assume that those are the same challenges that are here. No, they're not.
But with that being said, you know, we do have a lot of partners here in the Anchorage Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have our federal partners
yeah.
as well as the troopers, and we do work with the other surrounding community
yeah.
law enforcement entities. So what do we do to make good partners? Well, you establish a relationship and a dialogue with each one of them so that you don't wait for an incident to happen to then make those working relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You try to get out in front of it,
mm-hmm.
similar to what we talk about with community police and so on.
Right.
We have individuals from the police department that work in the offices side by side with the various federal agencies like the FBI, the DEA, the IRS,
APD
the ATF.
People are
correct,
in their offices. Okay.
As well as their officer, I mean, their agents and so on come and work with us.
Mm-hmm.
We, on a very regular meeting at every level from the chiefs on down to patrol, mm-hmm. are meeting with troopers and doing projects with them. We share intelligence and so on. Because more than likely, our crime that we're seeing here is going to tie into their crime. These criminals have no boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And the information they have could be key to solving and stopping additional mm-hmm. crime in our areas.
Right. So your point being, there are different agencies
there
here,
are a lot.
But the boundaries are porous. You're talking to each other a lot, which is a different situation than what we were describing,
correct.
These little tiny Where entities.
Turf wars with
yeah.
the others. We
right.
don't let those turf wars
yeah.
Stand in the way
right.
and become
yeah.
problematic
yeah.
for us.
Yeah.
Local policing in the United States, it emerges as a result of the local environment that it's in, much in the same way that local government does. So there's 17,000 to 19,000 local police departments, and there's 19,000 different ways to do local policing
mm-hmm.
in this country.
That's discouraging. Talk about a mess, right?
There are a lot of common practices that have become best practices in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But it's surprising. It's one of the things that makes it an interesting area of academic study is that there is so much differentiation between
mm-hmm.
Different departments across
right.
the country.
Right. I'm just going to throw out our numbers one more time because we probably have enough time for a call or two. 550-8433 or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I'm in the studio with APD Chief Tolley and Troy Payne from from the Anchorage Community Police Relations Task Force and a justice professor at UAA. We were going to talk about community relations, but we've been talking about it all the way around. So one of the things I thought would be good to talk about is when we were talking about 2012, there were a couple of incidences here that drew a lot of attention from the community. People didn't understand why an officer did what an officer did. And you talked about that being an important thing that happened in Anchorage early on that led to a lot of self-reflection in the department and some changes. And I wondered, could you just talk about that a little bit, Troy?
Yeah, there had been a series of officer-involved shootings that led to a larger community discussion here that happened before the events in Ferguson
right.
and elsewhere throughout the country. And I think the difference between Anchorage and other places was, one, the police department was able to get out in front of that because of organizations like the Police Community Relations Task Force and because of the existing relationships, as Chief Tolley was saying, between different community groups and the police department. It's not as if this crisis happens and then that's the first time anybody has talked. That's a poor way to do this. So instead, these existing relationships were able to be leveraged to make sure that we didn't have the sort of civil unrest that we've seen elsewhere throughout the country. In the process, what APD did is they made their policy manual public. It's available now on their website because there were questions in the community about, well, wait, what is the policy surrounding use of force? And the police department had not previously published that, which is, again, not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And we also worked with the police department to host several community events where we talked about, okay, well, under what circumstances do officers use force and why do they take the actions that they take? We don't have really time to get
right,
into those,
right.
But those are some of the things that we talk about in events at UAA or in our classes,
yeah.
too. I mean, these are things that come up all the time.
Right. Well, you made a point to me that not every police department puts its policies like that up on the website.
They do not.
And so if people don't know about that, that's a good thing, and it's a transparency. One thought I had about that is we may need to translate it into many different languages because of the diversity in our community. Or maybe we need a Google Translate app or something. But I'm going to welcome Chris on the air. Hi, Chris. What's your question?
Actually, I have a comment. I just wanted to compliment the chief. I work for a governmental organization that has regular daily contact with law enforcement. I review police reports on a daily basis to see if it meets our organization's need for investigation. The reports are thorough. The officers I always deal with are very professional and show very little bias and just a lot of detail in the reports. And compared to other jurisdictions that I've worked for, municipalities, I think they really do a great job.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate that feedback. It means a lot. And I know the men and women out there that are doing this job, that means a lot to them. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. There was one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, which was the taser thing. Remember we talked about there was Chief Mew when he was still on, it became an issue and some officers had them. Can you give us an update on that? This is Troy. Hi, Troy.
Yeah, hi. It is.
Oh, we're out of time.
Well, we'll just have to come back.
Yeah, you'll have to come back. There's lots to talk about. I, if you have a sentence, you can say it. If not, we'll have to leave it for another
We'll have to leave it there.
Okay, all right. Well, I really want to thank you both for coming on Hometown Alaska. Thank Chief Tolley with the APD. Thank you for your time. I know it's hard to get, and we appreciate it. And Troy, thank you so much. Troy Payne from the Justice Center and the Anchorage Community Police Relations Task Force got it out there. Thank you, too, for your background and the nuances that you were able to bring here. Thanks to our listeners and callers also, and I want to tell folks, next week, Charles Walforth and I will host Hometown Alaska together in a special edition. We like to invite our callers to give us feedback and show ideas, so we're doing that next week. And I'd like to mention Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Eric Bork is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska. Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.